Welcome to In the Studio with the 21st Century Perspective on History's Greatest Rock Albums.
Guitar up.
One, two, three.
I'm Red Beard, and today we're in the studio for the 40th anniversary, the deluxe edition of Straight Shooter from Bad Company.
Out of desperation, we needed material, come to think of it, you know? Yeah, it was just floating in the back of my mind. I thought, oh yeah, we could use that one. So I started to play it, and I said to Ralph, see, it needs a chorus, you know, it needs something to come in heavy here. So he goes, how about this? Ba-bam, bam!
Don't you know that you are a shooting star? Yeah, and all the world will love you just as long as you are.
Clerwell Castle.
An old castle that was had been converted into a hotel.
This is Simon Kirk of Bad Company.
This is Mick Ralph of Bad Company on the In Studio program with Red Beard.
This is Paul Rogers, also of Bad Company, on In the Studio with Red Beard. And here we are celebrating 40 years.
Last episode, we learned that all of the members of Bad Company agreed that being the first band signed to Led Zeppelin's Swan Song label, as well as sharing management with legendary Zeppelin manager Peter Grant, was advantageous in the immediate popularity of Bad Company's debut album in 1974, as well as the follow-up, 1975's Straight Shooter, with lead singer-songwriter Paul Rogers and drummer Simon Kirk both graduated from the British blues rock band Free, guitarist-songwriter Mick Ralphs, ex-Mott the Hoople, and bass player Boz Burrell on sabbatical from a stint with King Crimson. The expectations for this so-called supergroup were exceedingly high, according to first Simon Kirk, followed by Mick Ralphs.
At the time of the second album, yeah. we sat down and thought, God, that was amazing. You know, is there more? You know,
like, because we didn't headline on the first tour, we supported. I think the album and single both got to number one by the time we'd finished the tour. So obviously, the next tour was going to be a headliner. Plus, we had to come up with an album that would, you know, match up to.
Not much time to write it.
Not much time at all to match up to its predecessor. So that's when the crunch started coming.
Yeah, that's when we started feeling the pressure, I suppose. But we came up with a good second album, which was fortunate in a lot of ways, because that we got into the routine then of recording and touring as any band would, but it was a constant process with us.
Bad Company's opening salvo from Straight Shooter was Good Lovin' Gone Bad. Lead singer Paul Rogers recalls the unconventional location where the album was recorded.
If my memory serves me well, we did that at Clerwell Castle, which is this very strange castle that they have out in the country in England. And they do these medieval things. Everybody gets dressed up like, King Arthur and drinks mead. And it's really silly. So all that was going on in back of what we were doing was nuts.
Bad Company drummer Simon Kirk joins Mick Ralphs in the studio.
Yes, in a castle.
Clerwell Castle.
An old castle that was had been converted into a hotel or a place where people could go and spend the weekend or whatever. There were certain rooms there that weren't used, that were empty, and we rented them for a two-week period. And there would be guests there occasionally at the weekends. They'd have medieval banquets and things. We were down in the cellars, like the dungeons. We were sort of tucked away around the corner, really.
We came up one evening, a friend of ours had won a boxing title, and I stormed into the banquet hall, and there was all these people, sort of 40 people who paid $100 or whatever for this meal. And I think I jumped up on the trestle tables and danced right the way down through the end, and they all wanted their money back and all. They wanted to go home. They were good, though.
Supposed to be like a medieval evening, you know.
They didn't realize there was a rock group in the basement, you know, causing havoc.
Here's Paul Rogers, Bad Company's lead singer and songwriter, recalling making the Grammy Award-winning song Feel Like Making Love.
Feel Like Making Love. Yeah, we had come off of a very heavy tour at that time, and I was turned around completely from the band, so I was in total jet lag because I'd gone right round the world through Japan and everything. And they were like raving while I was sleeping, and I was wide awake while they were sleeping, so it was kind of weird. And I had the song Feel Like Making Love from the Free Days, actually, and I hadn't finished it. You know, it was, I had the verses, you know, baby, when I think about you. You know, it was about somebody I met, I guess. We were writing the album in the studio, you know, which is never ideal, because I don't like to do that. I much prefer, it's very expensive. It's much better to do the work in the rehearsal room and then just come in the studio and record it. But anyway, that's what we were doing because needs must. And so I thought, oh yeah, that's why I used the song, out of desperation. We needed material. Come to think of it, you know? Yeah, it was just floating in the back of my mind. I thought, oh, yeah, we could use that one. Mm. So I started to play it, and I said to Ralph, see, oh, it needs a chorus, you know, it needs something to come in heavy here. So he goes, how about this? Ba-bam, bam. And I said, yeah, that'll do it. And I started to sing, feel like making. So we had this song, you know. Weird, isn't it? Yeah. Came together, like, almost by accident. Yeah. It might have still been floating around my head today, if we hadn't, like, needed a song desperately, you know? Isn't that weird?
A Grammy Award winner from Bad Company's 1975 second album Straight Shooter, Feel Like Making Love was co-written by singer Paul Rodgers and guitarist Mick Ralphs.
Paul had the verse, the country feel verse, you know, the nice verse. And I said, well, that's all very nice, but, you know, the whole song can't stay on that level. It's got to have some kind of climax or some kind of deviance, you know. And then I suggested the heavy riff, the chorus, so we put it together and it worked good in the same key, and it just happened to sit together real well, you know. So that worked out pretty good. See, there's two basic emotions in any song, is up and down, major and minor, you know, the up mood or the down mood, you know, and it's either songs usually one or the other, and that one just was a bit of both, you know.
Bad Company drummer Simon Kirk joins Mick Ralphs.
You see, the record company weren't breathing down our necks for singles, which is what they do nowadays.
Yeah, we were allowed to go in and just record whatever we felt was a good record. And
also, we didn't have any execs coming down. I mean,
that was good, actually.
We were fairly insular and, you know, set aside in our own little enclave.
But there again, that was Peter, I think, because he was very aware of not letting the business get in the way of, like, you know, these days record company guys come and sit in on the sessions and they say,
tune your drums.
You know, and can't you do the chorus again to make it more, or whatever the word is, you know, all these words they use, I don't know. Peter Grant said, you know, you go make the record and I'll keep everybody else away, you know, and just give me the record when you finished it. So we had no contact with record company people. It was just, we'd say to him, well, you know, he'd come and listen to it, and we'd say we're finished, and he'd say, great, and he'd take it and play it to Atlantic, and he'd say, yeah, that's the record, you know, put it out. As opposed to, what do you think of this record? You know, we can change it if you like, you know. Mm-hmm. There was none of that then, which that really helped us as well, because I don't think we could, we weren't the sort of group that could stand, like, being turned down and having to redo the album in a different way, you know. We'd say, well, couldn't see it really any other way. That was just so black and white to us. You know, it was that simple, and if they didn't like it, that was too bad.
Great rhythm guitar from Bad Company's Mick Ralphs on Wildfire Woman from the 1975 second album Straight Shooter. Next, Mick, Simon, Kirk, and Paul Rodgers discuss a surprising British backlash against Bad Company, plus the tragic real-life inspiration behind the classic song Shooting Star. This Bad Company album Straight Shooter, as well as the Bad Company debut, are both available now as two-disc remastered deluxe editions on compact disc and premium vinyl. Both of these contain many previously unreleased songs, alternate takes, demos, and B-sides, and are in store and online now. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Bad Company's Paul Rodgers, Mick Ralphs, and Simon Kirk for the 40th anniversary of Straight Shooter.
Welcome back to the studio. I'm Simon Kirk.
And I'm Mick Ralphs of Bad Company.
Hi, I'm Paul Rodgers in the studio for the original Bad Company's Straight Shooter.
Thanks, guys. It's the 40th anniversary of Straight Shooter by Bad Company. All of the members of Bad Company agreed that being the first band signed to Led Zeppelin's Swan Song label, as well as sharing management with legendary Zeppelin manager Peter Grant, was advantageous in the immediate popularity of Bad Company's debut album in 1974, as well as this follow-up, 1975 Straight Shooter. With lead singer-songwriter Paul Rodgers and drummer Simon Kirk both graduated from the British blues rock band Free, guitarist-songwriter Mick Ralphs, ex-Mott the Hoople, the expectations for this so-called supergroup were exceedingly high, according to first Simon Kirk, followed by Mick Ralphs and Paul Rodgers.
The thing about a supergroup, you know, it's a double-edged sword because, yeah, it opens a lot of doors and people want to interview you if you're from three well-known bands, but ultimately it's down to you or the band to deliver the goods. You know, I mean, Blind Faith didn't do it. You know, they released one dubious album. They didn't tour very well. They only did one tour. Crosby, Stills and Nash, yeah, they knocked it out of the park. Ultimately, it's down to the music, and it opened doors, and the Zeppelin clout, sure, it certainly helped. But we did deliver. Bottom line is, we did deliver.
Yeah, it was up to us at the end of the day, and that was quite apparent when Peter became less and less available to manage us as time went on, because he was involved in Zeppelin and various other crises that came up. Mm. So we held our head up and carried on as long as we could. But it was a great association, and I think it did nothing but help us get to where we got.
Yeah, and I mean, we still see Robert and Jimmy. Jimmy comes to the shows. He was at Wembley, actually.
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
And
still friends. It's great.
Yeah, absolutely. Good lads.
Good people.
On Bad Company's first album, Paul Rodgers had sung his actual vocal on the album and band's theme song, while Rodgers stood outside Headley Grange in a field under a full moon at midnight.
Yeah, I did what they call a pilot vocal. And when you do a pilot vocal, you put a sort of leather hat on and these glasses and stuff.
I remember one time a guy said to me, he said, I believe Paul did the vocal to Bad Company. I said he did it on the lawn at with a full moon. And he said, oh, outside. I said, well, lawns usually are. Outside,
well, it was a lawn in the studio. This place had everything, man.
It's just we had to wait about a year for a full moon to get the atmosphere.
It was foolish.
Yeah, it was foolish. Yeah. No, it was...
Well, we actually...
It was a master stroke.
We did the track, and it did the pilot vocal, as they call it, you know, with the leather hat and all things. And we set up the microphone and the headphones and everything. It was about 100 yards of lead, actually, over fences and cow shit and all this stuff and everything. We set it up, and then we waited till the evening, right? And then I clambered up there with a torch.
I remember,
and headphones. Yeah. Hello?
Hello? Hello? One, two,
it was really
two.
Strange. I was standing in the middle of this
field. We could hear the birds and the owls
and wind blowing and stuff like that.
It was great, actually. Poor Ron Nevison there.
Yeah.
And
they played the track, and the one they played the track, it was very eerie just to hear the dang, dang, dang.
Especially in the night time.
It just was really eerie and very atmospheric. And at the end of it, there was a wind that just went across the microphone. There's a cool wind blowing, you know.
Oh, yeah. It was amazing. It was little things like that happened all the time with us.
Organic.
Organic, but magical.
We've done British TV. Well, I mean, hey, you know, but all the camera crew walked off because it was too loud.
It was almost acoustic.
And we were like, where's everybody gone? You know? and it was a different. It was kind of square in those days. I mean, I think it might be a little bit different now.
But, yeah, it's a little bit better, but it was very rinky-dink, wasn't it, in those days?
Hey, guys, can you turn it down a bit?
Oh, yeah, I mean...
Which is a kiss of death,
thank you.
It? Remember?
Yeah.
Poor old Bob Harris.
Well, Bob Harris, that was a good show, though. Did you do that many times? Yeah.
He's a good lad.
Yeah, he was...
But Whistle Test.
That
run on a shoestring budget, and they had the cameraman from the gardening programs. These old guys about 80 just wanted to go home. Didn't want to hear anything noisy at all. I think G pulled us in the end. Peter Grant said,
no, come on, boys.
He said, it doesn't sound like
if you can't play properly, then we'll...
It sounded like a folk group.
He kept saying, can you please turn it down a little more? And it was Feel Like Making Love, so the verses were
actually loud. Oh, yeah, I guess,
you know, the verses were okay because it's, you know... But chorus, then we hit the
chorus kicked
and
in, and
suddenly the cameras went limp.
Yeah,
and they just sort of left, you know, dangling. And
it's very old fashioned, the BBC. Well, it was in those days.
Bless them. Yeah. We probably shouldn't say too much because we might want to do a TV show.
Oh yeah,
down the road.
Great, I love
them. Smashing,
fabulous,
lovely.
Right, remarkably, even while at the vortex of their ever faster spinning career, Bad Company's singer-songwriter Paul Rodgers still had the clarity to write one of the tenderest lyrics about fame in the song Shooting Star.
Yeah, that's true, but I had seen the way that certain people had gone, and it seemed a shame to me that that it had to be, you know, that it shouldn't have to be that way, you know, it shouldn't have to be, in order to be a successful and happy musician, you had to burn yourself out to do so. It didn't seem that... it seemed a shame, Jimi Hendrix and Janis Joplin and even Paul Kossoff, you know. Yeah, it just went through my mind and I just started to sing, Johnny was a schoolboy. And the whole thing just laid itself out for me, you know. Almost wrote itself, actually, yeah.
A timeless truism from Paul Rodgers and Bad Company, that Shooting Star, from 1975's Straight Shooter Bad Company album. Still to come, Mick Ralph, Simon Kirk, and Paul Rodgers return to reveal the pleasures and the pressures of Bad Company's Express Elevator to the Top. This Bad Company album, Straight Shooter, as well as the first Bad Company, are both available now as two-disc remastered deluxe editions on compact disc and premium vinyl. Both contain many previously unreleased songs, alternate takes, demos, and B-sides. It's in store and online now. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Bad Company's Paul Rodgers, Mick Ralphs, and Simon Kirk for the triple platinum seller, Straight Shooter, 40th anniversary.
Welcome back to the studio. I'm Simon Kirk.
And I'm Mick Ralphs of Bad Company.
Hi, I'm Paul Rodgers in the studio for the original Bad Company's Straight Shooter.
Thanks again, guys. I'm Redbeard on the 40th anniversary of Bad Company's second multi-platinum album in a row, 1975 Straight Shooter. It was their second U.S. tour when we started to read disturbing reports about violent flare-ups on the road, such as the time when lead singer Paul Rodgers punched a wall backstage and broke his hand.
It's like you've got your whole lifetime to make the first album and then about 2 weeks to make the next one. You know, and it just, you know, you do burn, you know, and you can sort of like, yeah, that's what happened. We needed a rest, you know. I mean, I remember going on holiday at one time. I had a couple of weeks holiday. I went to the south of France and I got a phone call. Oh, while you're on holiday, you can write the next album, you know. I said, man. And I was young enough to think that, like, well, okay, I guess I've got to do that, you know. But like, as I say, you learn. You need to control what you're doing, how you do it, and to make sure that the energy level is high, because that's what you need. That's what it's all about. It's an energy exchange.
Mick Ralphs and Simon Kirk remind us that no band exists and works in a vacuum. Behind the scenes, Bad Company's career was tied directly to Led Zeppelin, who actually owned the record label, and fabled manager Peter Grant, with whom Bad Company shared with Led Zeppelin. Here's Mick Ralphs and Simon Kirk.
For us, you know, up until the point of...
Paul broke his hand.
Yeah, we had our, you know, moments of where it all got a bit much, but I think really in reality... it was just, you know, the headiness of success carried us along, and we never actually faltered. It was only maybe when Zeppelin stopped working and Peter sort of retired from active management that we suddenly found ourselves without that sort of guiding light, and we sort of floundered then, you know, and sort of basically we split up because we hadn't got that sort of father figure sort of, you know, guiding us. So up to that point, we pretty much went along with the way it was going. We were drawn along with the success, and it did get a bit hairy, but I mean...
We
came through it all right.
Maybe five or six headline tours. I can't really remember, to be honest, but the first couple, for me, were everything I'd always dreamed about, and then...
They were fantastic days, you know.
The love and affection that Paul Rodgers, Mick Ralphs, and Simon Kirk share for one another, as well as the timeless music they created as the original Bad Company, is so obvious that it begs the question, why did Bad Company ever stop? Paul Rodgers reminded us that at the dawn of the 80s, rock bands were heading out into uncharted territory, and not everyone was coming back.
It had all become a bit...
Well, when Bonzo died, and I just felt we were flying too high.
Yeah.
Something had to give, and I just wanted to come off the road and...
I think if we hadn't stopped, something terrible might have happened to him.
Yeah, because we were out flying out there, weren't we, really?
Yeah.
It's like, whew.
I think Paul saw the red light before we did, because we wanted to keep going, but in retrospect, yeah, we needed to just pull back and reflect on what we'd done. You know, when you're going along at that pace... With that amount of
interest or money or accessibility, whatever you want to call it.
Becomes an industry.
Becomes an industry and you become part of it.
Itself. Yeah,
big you start beating yourself up. You know,
not worth it.
No.
And I think, you know, by
so
the same
token.
So you
had to put the brakes on and thank God you did.
Getting back together, we know within half an hour if it's going to work. And it does work. And the times that we've reunited, it's worked.
But we get together now because we want to, not because, like, then it was like, well, okay, lads, come off a 3-month flat out tour, go and write some songs, do another album, then do another tour. It's like, I'm not complaining. We had a great time, but the pressure.
But there was times like Burning Sky when we turned up for that
songs.
Album.
Yeah,
we came right off the road, and then okay, lads, make another album. Yeah. And it was really, really
you and
tough.
I were going, well, what have you got? Have I got this?
We almost thought, well, we'll record what we've got, but we probably won't release it because we just don't have the energy to give it what we feel it
That's
needs.
That's right.
And
because up to that point, we always had a few songs in, you know, ready for the next record. Oh, I think it all just culminated around that time. The business can do that to you, and if you don't watch out, it'll crush you. Because that was another
it'll
band.
It'll just eat up your life, yeah. But I think it's good. I mean, looking back now, I can look back on it fondly, really, because there's some great memories, and we survived.
Yeah.
And we're still here, and we can still kick it out there, I think, fairly well.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
It's very enjoyable these days.
Whoa, did you check that out? The harmonica solo in the middle of that version of Feel Like Making Love. And Mick Ralphs tears up that guitar. Wow, I've never heard him play that incredibly well. On an alternate track on Straight Shooter, there are 14 more bonus tracks, all previously unreleased, except for the rare B-side Whiskey Bottle, all included on the 2-disc deluxe edition of Straight Shooter on its 40th anniversary. And register to win this Bad Company Squire Tele guitar by Fender, autographed by Paul Rogers. See it. Win it now at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guests, Paul Rogers, Mick Ralphs, and Simon Kirk. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2015, all rights reserved. Transcription, Jane Carpenter Brunet. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.